Well, thank you for allowing me to be here today. I'm actually started out with Mike Bisich's talk, and then knowing me, I changed it a little bit or a lot, depending upon what you think of how it will be. But I would like to start out by talking about 10 minutes about where I think we are in pathology right now, and then in terms of quality and safety. And then I would like to use that as a segue into where I think we can be and some of the things that we're doing in Colorado. I'd also like, if you're interested in some of the things that we're doing that probably exist elsewhere, I'd like to ask you to come forward and partner with a group of us who are trying to move forward how I think we can transform pathology into the future related to quality and safety. But let me start out by just sort of giving a background. And I asked, and I've been trying to figure out different ways that IT can help quality improvement in laboratories, but I'd really like to start out and say, what's the real problem? Right now, what's the real problem in laboratories that we need to address, and how can IT tools help? Well, when we talk about quality, there's been a number of different talks already today that sort of looked at quality in a number of different ways. And these are some definitions of quality, and I don't want to really dwell on what quality is in terms of this frame, but I would like to look at what QI is, because a lot of the things that we do in pathology and what IT tools do now, I think are related to quality assurance. And I believe that what we have to do is really move forward to a combined effort to how we do QI in laboratories and how we can adapt tools that can actually help us to do QI. Now, if you look at the IOM's domains of quality, they're listed up here. We often talk of safety in terms of one of the aspects of quality, and sometimes we split out safety to mean something different than quality. But all of these domains of quality exist integrated together. You can't change one without changing another one. You can't change safety without changing efficiency. So a goal in what we do in terms of quality improvement is really, I believe, designing systems so that they can positively affect at least most of these domains of quality. One of the last domains of quality that labs tend not to focus on is equity, or making certain that all patients get the same type of care. I believe that where pathology can be in the future is actually the center of equity. And I believe that there are actually ways that we can position laboratories to be the main driver of healthcare in the United States today. If you look again at the IOM's levels of care, they divide care into four different levels. The first level, the most important level, is the experience of patients, or level A. Microsystems are the units of care that deliver, you know, safe, appropriate care to patients. Pathology laboratories fall within the domain of level B because they are participating in delivering care to patients. The organizations that support microsystems include hospitals, you could say departments, organizations, healthcare systems that support the ability of microsystems to deliver care to patients. And the last, probably one of the most important aspects of delivering good care to patients is really related to level D, and that's the environment outside of organizations that drive organizations in certain ways. So if we want to affect patients, we really have to affect all of these different aspects or all of these different levels of care to really deliver the optimal care. Now, the current care in the United States, or I should say the current care before the economy fell apart, was that there were high rates of inappropriate care delivered to patients. There was large variation in clinical practice delivery, high frequency of patient harm related to medical error, and I include undertesting and overtesting as a relationship to medical error or poor quality, and markedly high levels of waste resulting in astronomical costs of healthcare. When I've gone into labs and actually looked at how labs deliver care, I would say that 30 to 50% of all laboratory activities are waste. And these wastes drive up the cost of healthcare. Now, until we reform the organizational delivery, until we reform the environment, I think it's very difficult for anybody to actually affect a lot of change at the microsystem or the laboratory level in delivering that type of care. If you look at care in terms of the models of care delivery, we can talk about what used to be, which I think is the top-down model of care, versus where I think we're heading to, and we've heard the word lean multiple times today, and lean used appropriately, meaning the bottom-up way of delivering healthcare. So you can look at the way that healthcare used to be delivered as sort of a glorified physician actually making decisions regarding patients, to where we're moving to now, which is the team approach, where groups of individuals work together to deliver healthcare. We can talk about a top-down model of who makes decisions related to healthcare versus a empowerment of the frontline staff in making decisions of how they want to change and deliver healthcare. We can look at a previous model, which is to incentivize and motivate people to do good work versus creating a system where work is easy to perform. We can look at a previous model where time was unlimited, resources were unlimited, to where we are now, where we really need to build in how we do good healthcare at the bottom level. Now, Brent James often talks about the difference between craft-based medicine and profession-based medicine. Previous healthcare being that of a craft-based medicine orientation, again, individual physicians who had a core ethical commitment to patients knew a huge amount of information, and then they would decide what is best for patients. But as we've moved into the current area of healthcare, knowing that vast amount of information in a single person is impossible. So he has argued that we need to move to a profession-based way in which we deliver healthcare, where groups of peers, of which laboratories form what I think is the core center of this group, are treating patients in a similar fashion, providing coordinated care delivery, and then that the individual patient, individual care teams and clinicians adapt to what a patient actually needs. Now, again, we've talked about how we have previously envisioned diagnostic testing into a number of different steps, of which the analytic phase or the laboratory phase of evaluating and taking care of patients is just a portion of laboratory care. But if we talk about how we want to redesign laboratory care, then we need to redesign this whole system from the deciding of how a test is going to be ordered or what's going to be ordered to actually what's going to happen to the patient after the test is rendered, test result is rendered. And again, I believe we need to, as pathology sits in the center of this, redesign healthcare with pathology laboratories being sort of the benign, what I would think is the most knowledgeable phase in how we are going to deliver laboratory care to patients. So this being an IT meeting, I believe, I wanted to sort of try and address how we are trying to look at that in terms of IT tools of centering care on the patient, but allowing the laboratory domain, the authority and the power to actually step outside of the laboratory and coordinate all care delivery. So getting back to the question of where I think we are, what are the problems related to our existing aspect of care delivery? One, and perhaps what I think is the major problem, is the complete lack of standardization in almost all processes and all steps of testing. Again, largely perhaps pre-analytic and post-analytic, but truly, when I've sat in anatomic pathology laboratories, almost no two laboratories do the same things in the same way. There's a breakdown in handoffs that actually Jeff Myers was talking about, no data to drive what we're going to do, lack of almost, you know, uniform training in how to even do quality improvement or what quality improvement is, and then cultural disincentives which come from this level D of how it is very difficult to do things in an IT level in a laboratory because we're not driven in that way to actually change. When we look at our existing tools that I think I've used in laboratories, we're actually looking at quality assurance tools that can monitor data, compare to benchmarks. You can develop force functions. You have to use the synoptic report in order to get out the correct diagnosis. And then tools that assess competencies, processes, and structures. But these are QA tools, and QA tools really exist in what's happened in the past or prevent you from doing something in the future. They're extremely important, but I think laboratories need to move to a system where we're actually using QI domain tools. But in order to use QI domain tools, we have to redesign laboratories that actually can do QI on the fly and redesign how we do QI on the fly with QI-associated informatic tools. So I would like to talk about one tool that we are developing, and again, this is something that I'm asking for partnership for anybody that is interested. We do lean in our laboratory, and we've been developing IT tools that basically do all of these things on a real-time basis, so that we want to change our laboratory into something that is actually, I think, a very fluid, unfixed system in which we use what IT is best for. And we'll be talking about that, or what I think IT is best for in this domain. So what we want to do is change the sort of the whole spectrum of a laboratory to make it not just like a what I think are lean operational systems outside of medicine, but to make it something that focuses entirely on the patient first and then branches out into both the pre-analytic and post-analytic domains. So some of the tools that we have developed in our laboratory really first start with problem identification real time. And problem identification real time occurs when people on the front line know when something is wrong is happening. And they need tools in which they can flag these things and either bring QI engineers or QI improvement specialists to actually the site where the problem is happening, or there's monitoring of systems so that we know on a sort of control box setting when something wrong is happening. So in lean systems, they're very focused on visual signals, red flags that go up, hands that go up, voices that go up, but we've been trying to actually initiate, in addition to those, video-based systems where we can either watch things happening real-time or watch things happening a few second delays when they're actually occurring, and people eyeing multiple monitors at one time to see when problems are occurring. We're actually also trying to create electronic contacts using tools so that when a problem happens, people can be flagged immediately. And so this is an example of a real-time video that's being watched, just one phase in an accessioning area related to something that's happening in a lab. And here we can see someone's taking things out of a box, knocking things over. You actually watch, they picked up the wrong requisition form when this was actually taking here. They're taking the wrong requisition form over to be ordered or over to be accessioned in. Now, ideally, we would never have a process in this way. And so the way that we wanted to redesign a tool is first so individuals can watch their activities when they had very busy times during the day that would then assist in a lean redesign of a laboratory. And I'm not really here to talk about how to do lean redesign in a laboratory, but this is about how we used video tools for these people to redesign their laboratory. The other thing is that we've created an aspect of a bunch of control monitors where you can see these things happening all the time in a laboratory for individuals, you know, basically watching shoplifters in a supermarket where things are going wrong. They can actually pick up where they're going wrong all the time. Here's another way that retrospectively we used IT tools where basically we fed data into a database, did clipping related to it, and then here they're actually batching reports that then they're going to, batching requisitions that then they are going to take over to a place and then accession in. And so again, what we have found is that when people actually watch work retrospectively using observational techniques, that embedding this into an IT quality improvement system actually can be used in a lean way to redesign the work-related processes. So I argue that IT tools that we're using in our laboratory should be very sort of media savvy and use all different aspects of how we can observe work, how we can improve work as we move beyond it. This is an example of a problem-based system where we have people using an IT tool to flag a team leader to see where a problem is occurring. Now, as we exist in many laboratories now, problems are occurring all the time, and our team leaders can't go to multiple areas in the laboratory because they would be, you know, frankly, we'd need like 100 team leaders in a laboratory our size just to fix all the problems that are occurring. But we have flagged different problems using different, you know, colors here, And we can see, first, pathologists complain the most. The second is that the thing that's happening in the laboratory is that problems are occurring all the time everywhere, and we use this as a means to both track when problems are occurring, then to go back and watch on video if we couldn't fix it at a time, or to send problem solvers to different portions of the laboratory. So you can carry this information real time when we have QI people moving to different parts of the laboratory, but it's basically flag systems that have been developed into IT-based tools. The second phase of quality improvement using a lean-based method is not just observing problems when they occur and sending someone to fix the problem, but is actually then participating in understanding the current state. So in our IT tool, we actually use a wiki for people in that area or for other areas to actually look at the current state of affairs. And this is actually a current state drawing by a team leader that went to look at a problem. But we put this on a on our domain and actually allow people in the laboratory to assess this, to redraw this, and then ship it back for multiple people to look at to see if this is what the agreed state of affairs is. Because one of the problems we have in laboratories and outside of laboratories is that people often think that this current state is the way it should be, and when we involve multiple people in the laboratory in looking at the current state, they even often disagree with the current state. We can use this to actually create sort of virtual laboratories that then they can look at their laboratory, move it around, look at their current state, and you can see in this sort of modified spaghetti diagram, multiple people moving in multiple ways, crossing each over, which sort of defies the way that you would want to set up a lean system in a laboratory. Again, you can look at the way that we can move people around, and so this is a static image of a current state, and given the static image, you could take this portion of where specimens are flowing and move it around to say, this is what's happening in my area, this is what's happening in your area, and we've used this to branch out both pre-analytically to involve clinical domains and post-analytically to involve what is happening in those domains when problems are occurring. So we can also set up video cameras pre-analytically looking at specimen procurement and post-analytically to determine what is actually taking place when results are conveyed to patients to identify problems and then to assist in the current state of affairs of how we're sort of looking at the current state by multiple people participating in this process. So what I'm actually describing to you is a social networking quality improvement tool that involves multiple people in the design and process with only certain people involved in actually the implementation strategies that then would occur back at the front line. In QI or lean QI, we often use one form of root cause analysis, which is an A3. So up at the top here, we have the basically problem, the current state of why it's occurring, and then the targeted condition, and then basically the assignments of what's going to take place. And we can do this all online, where on a social networking site, you can assign this, you can have people comment on what's happening. You can have people redesign it completely and say that I think we should do this related to quality improvement. Here's just another A3 wiki that we've had, and we have different iterations of this as people change things actually to the current condition and to what they think the targeted condition or ideal state is. So we've tried to move lean all the way to where everybody would be socially networking related to improving the quality. And my idea is that I want your labs, if you would want to, participate in this process where you can see these same problems occurring here across multiple laboratories all the time. So we have a database of these that you can go back and then go see how you would want to change things related to your laboratory, say, culture, which is the second aspect of what we want to do. When we do root cause analysis, that was just an example of a Toyota root cause analysis. We've built in other ways to do root cause analysis in our IT tool so that you can go through a modified Eindhoven, which often looks at system-related problems, and then we have a cultural analyst look at those system-related problems to see, again, and provide real-time feedback if you can actually fix the problem. You can invite different people, so you can have it open to, I want anybody in my laboratory, only the accessioning area, anybody in the hospital, pre-analytic only. Basically, you can create the domain so everybody's participating. And then we also, for beginners, have a way to define the problem and then provide examples of how you can solve these things, really with just the framework of this basic tool that then can be employed and adapted to different laboratories. Again, Jeff Myers talked about a lot of communication tools. And one of the things that we've been doing, again, is really trying to branch out to beyond the laboratory and make the laboratory the center of the information and the driver of change both pre-analytically and post-analytically because of the expertise that often exists in laboratories that may or may not exist in the clinical domains. And so we provide immediate, you know, clinician feedback related to specimen quality. So you can, again, create tools where immediate information is sent to them. Hey, crappy specimen. Hey, great specimen. Hey, great diagnosis. You can also pull information related to these tools when you want information coming to you from the outside. In a lean system, you always want to pull something, and you can allow the clinicians to pull the results from your laboratory if you set up this continuous flow, starting pre-analytically and post-analytically, and giving everybody the same tool. You can invite, and I think it actually, in the end, is a way to actually deal with critical test results, because critical test results just have a different sort of level of priority in this type of process of how information is moving pre-analytically to post-analytically with the lab as the center of the phase. We can invite different people to participate in our QI events so that we actually have a group of experts in lean that can comment on individual practices that are occurring in one laboratory or another laboratory. Again, I've talked about a social networking site, so everybody in the laboratory has their own page where they can invite people to basically participate in events, to read something related to quality improvement, and then they can have their own commentary, so you can have your, you know, histotechnologists have their own blogs about what they're doing related to quality in the laboratory, as well as inviting other histotechnologists from other laboratories to share in their successes and also question them when you're having problems related to what's happening in your laboratory. One of the most difficult things that we've experienced is the design and implementation phase of change, because change is really difficult, and this comes not because we're at a microsystem level, because I believe the organizational levels and the environment in which we practice today are exceedingly difficult. You know, there's not an incentive to do quality in laboratories given our current reimbursement system, as an example of one thing. So what we also have tried to do is create a center for design and implementation so that we can assist people in the laboratory in choosing metrics, because you really want a lot of things to be metric-driven, as well as how to collect data. So again, we can send an improvement specialist to say, you know, I'll collect your data, but what we want to do is make it simple. We want to make our LISs simple so that all you have to do is say, you know, I want to know that the time blocks were released from histology, or slides were released from histology, and you can get those data. That doesn't exist now, but we've actually employed a couple IT people that can work not real time, but a little behind real time to get the data for the people at the front line. We perform, you know, statistical analysis testing if need be. We try to allow the people on the front line to pull the data from a group of our IT people in the laboratory instead of, you know, they're having to go through the actual work of getting the data themselves. We involve multiple people, both pre-analytically and post-analytically, to allow discussions for cultural challenges of why this is difficult, to provide a safety barrier. You can, you know, provide a, you know, talk to the expert related to lean and different aspects. When we do implementation, we create a Hoshin Kanri, which really means sort of could mean a long-term planning, but we use it in terms of how we divvy up what's going to take place, who's going to do what, and who's going to be responsible for the QI tasks that are taking place in the lab. And we try to basically make it move across all the domains of testing. So if there's a problem pre-analytically, we want there to be lab people involved in the clinicians helping to solve the problem that's occurring. When it's occurring post-analytically, we want the lab to be basically solving or assisting in solving the problem. Thus, I think moving all of the domains of laboratory testing into what I think is a single center, which is linked by an IT tool that allows multiple people from the different domains always to communicate with each other about where the problem is and how to fix it. And that often is difficult in laboratories because they're not used to, and clinicians are not used to, the driving of testing to be done in the laboratory, not by their ordering practices, which are often flawed and faulty. So this is an example of an ideal state of, remember I showed you an example of one of these before, of how we want to get to the place where we want to be. So again, this is a wiki where people that are looking at it can move this around and say, I think this is the ideal state. I think we should bypass this step. I think we should eliminate this step. And so what, again, we want to have happen with our QI IT tools is that everybody can be involved, everybody can own it, and the result, when it occurs out positively, is a result of everybody working together as a team across all the domains of testing. Here's another example of an ideal state of how people actually, you know, redesigned the system that was flawed to begin with. And again, my idea now isn't to talk about what we actually did, but to talk about why I think this is a new way of doing it that most laboratories aren't used to doing it. So I don't even see these things when they happen in our laboratory because they happen at the front line and the line where people are actually interested in actually changing the way that they practice. This is an example of one of these Kaizens where we, in this case, drew it, where you can then transfer this to a movable form and then, you know, comment on these different, these are hairy clouds that you can see where problems are, where we can assign tasks related to the individuals doing the tasks, allowing them actually to take ownership of the change, even if it's a very simple change that's occurring in their processes in their laboratory. The other main component of our IT tool is that you provide them data so that they can see immediately what they're doing, what their work is, what their problems are, and, you know, how good a job they're doing. So this is an IT tool that was designed for transcription where they can see when they have work available. Because when you don't know when you have work available, you can't change the way that you're going to do work. So what we wanted is our IT system to basically, you know, plot these data points as soon as they became available. So as soon as someone finished the dictation, it got plotted to this board, and then the transcriptionist could pull the data knowing how much data that they had there. And when we become very busy, this allows us, by stacked data points here, allows us to change, they allow themselves to change their staffing to deal with certain issues that may be occurring at that portion in the laboratory. This is, again, an example of data mapping related to actually receipt of specimens of when they're coming in laboratories that allows the frontline people to redesign how they're going to work related to their individual areas. And this is these are multiple days, and the new day kind of comes up with the dots plotting where they're actually doing work, knowing if they're going to have a busy day or a light day. And if it's a light day, then these people can actually assist more in quality improvement activities outside of the laboratory and in the pre- and post-analytic domains if they don't have as much work to do. It also allows us, again, this is another way of plotting data using statistical process control, mounting, looking at standard deviations from work, and when work goes above a certain level, it's considered out of control, and you have to design your system either by reallocating people, by reprocessing work, or redesigning work to allow you to do it more efficiently. So we can see that we went out of control. No one was hired. We just redesigned work processes, or they redesigned work processes, again, to allow themselves to actually see what they're doing. And I believe our IT tools need to be designed so that people see immediately what work they have and how difficult that work is going to be to doing. Now, this has actually led us to the evolution, and we're in the middle of this, of creating a simulation laboratory at the University of Colorado. And the simulation laboratory has multiple components to it. It has an educational component so that, say, for example, you want to train a histotechnologist, you know, or want to train a resident. Why on earth do we still train residents on fresh specimens if they don't know how to grow? Frankly, why? So why not create a simulation laboratory, which we're trying to do, where people can go and get educated, where people can learn best practices of all these different ways, and our IT tools of feeding them information of best practices in each of these domains allows all people in all areas of the lab, both pre-analytic and post-analytic, to learn how to do processes to come up with the best way to do work. We also deal with real-time practice. So, you know, you can take specimens, put them in a simulated laboratory, and say, are we cutting the specimen the best way? Are we, you know, embedding the specimen the best way? And we found that when we do this, we markedly change both efficiency and quality of work when you allow people to basically use different types of specimens in a practice-based but simulated environment. The other thing that we do is train people in all different ways. And a lot of the ways that we can train people are not only by real-time practice, but using videos of watching things, by actually creating, you know, simulated environments. So simulation, if you think of, can be sort of, you know, Annie who gets, you know, CPR, or it can be creating the environment of what an emergency department is when someone comes in with an MI, and what do you do, what do you do, what do you do? We believe that, you know, the simulation laboratory is how you can train both clinicians pre-analytically and post-analytically, as well as the pathologist, what do you do, what do you do, what do you do in particular types of situations. And so one of the things, and this is actually my link to, still linked to Mike Bisich, has been creating intelligent tutor systems, where Mike and team have created intelligent tutor systems, and we've studied them of how they can be applied to actual systems in medicine. So if you, again, look at where we do simulations in the aviation industry, nuclear and power plant industry, military, you know, why not do it in medicine as well? And it is being used in other domains, but we wanted to create a pathology simulation system that can look at IT tools as approaching, you know, how would you fly a plane? How would you handle this case? How would you cut this case? One of the things that we do in related to, say, technical staff is that they can be educated in Lean using a simulation laboratory. They can recognize common problems. They can practice and redesign and problem solving. They can practice communication techniques. They can use what we call or may believe to be the development of best practices. And we can also do research on cultures of why some people have a difficult time or why organizations have a difficult time in adopting these types of systems. So here's an example of just a, you know, a fixed image that can be provided in a simulation laboratory is what's wrong with this situation or what's wrong with this. And these are a bunch of cassettes from multiple cases that are all sort of linked up together, which is an example of a latent error ready to occur. Here's another example of just pictures that can be provided in a training scenario related to how we can train different people, in this case, grossroom techs, of what can go wrong related to this situation where we actually have, you know, this cassette on this piece of paper belonging to another patient, which could be a form of ID error. Really simplistic things, but I think if you begin to train all our techs, all our residents, all our pathologists using these types of methods, and again, this can be a test that's IT-driven, we can use videos, and this is an example of a fallen cassette or falling container falling on another place. You can use, again, these types of videos where you can actually, you know, show people real-life scenarios of what's happening. You can create real-life scenarios by people actually participating in a simulation lab where they're doing something wrong and people can observe it actually happening, and then multiply, you know, looking at what we can do to fix the problem using those domains that we talked about previously, in our case using A3 and Eindhoven methods of root cause, redesign of practice, and then implementation of practice. One of the last things that, again, Mike's Rebecca Crowley works with Mike Bisich, Dana Grzybicki works with me. They're actually, as a group of us, are grant-funded to look at an intelligent tutor looking at pathologist cognition processes. So the last component that we're trying to build into a simulation laboratory is how do you train pathologists to look at slides? And if you think of it, it's a completely unstandard way. We believe we have to go to a guru who's the best at looking a slide. But why can't we have them teach us in a simulation laboratory of how to look at a slide? So what we wanted to do, well, I'd say what I wanted to do is a little bit different than probably what most people want to do. But what I want to do is take these experts and put them in a simulation laboratory, their mindset of how they look at a slide. And this is something that was built by Rebecca Crowley, where she created this idea of virtual images of skin diagnoses or dermatopathology diagnoses, which then can be shown to people in training, or they can be shown, as Dana has looked at, in terms of how pathologists actually practice. So this is an example of an image, and that you can identify certain criteria on the slide and then use those criteria to come up with a diagnosis. You can either falsely identify the criteria or correctly identify the criteria and still come up with the right or wrong diagnosis. So this is sort of a tree model of how I think people initially learn pathology. I believe that once we learn sort of the criteria-based approach, we actually switch to a different model, which is sort of the gestalt model of how we look at pathology. And I think that's sort of the things that Dana is now looking at now. So here, they can identify particular parts of a slide and say, I see something here, and then move on to say, this thing here is actually showing these types of elements. They've moved to another part of the slide when they're making the diagnosis. And again, they go through a number of criteria-based ways in which they would come to the conclusion that this, you know, diagnosis in this case is, you know, melanoma or invasive melanoma or something like that. Now, one of the things that currently Dana is now studying is how people look at these slides using this simulated tutor. So the tutor can teach people by saying, no, it's not that. No, recognize this, which I think is very good for residents. For actually people in training, this is actually one person's movement on a slide, and this isn't new, looking at how people move along a slide, but it is linked to what they're thinking, and I think how they come to the process of making a diagnosis. You can see this is how another person looked at the slide, so you can see that these two people looked at the slide completely differently. So this is how they drive around, they're focused something on this end of the slide, focused on something on this end of the slide, the straight lines are, you know, fast movements or movements over to one area to the slide. And we find that how pathologists look at things, again, is unstandard. And our goal is to develop a best way to actually be, you know, go through the cognitive task of what you're looking at in a gestalt model so that you're not overlooking different parts of the slide and you're reaching conclusions at the same time. So again, this is the cognition part of a simulation laboratory that I think is probably a small part of error, when most of the parts of error really result in communication and process breakdowns that we're actually trying to look at now. So again, I know the questions will be for later, but I would invite you, if you would like to participate in this, or if any of the vendors would like to participate in equipment and being used in this type of process, please let me know. That's what I have to say. Thank you.